It's time for an inside look at the most powerful motorsport on the planet. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Hey, everybody. WFO Joe Costello back in the studio following the NGK, NTK, NHRA. That's a lot of letters. Four wide NHRA Nationals. We're also getting ready for Houston, the Spring Nationals this weekend, the first back-to-back NHRA in a long time. And I am super excited. We got the voice of the NHRA, Alan Reinhart, going to be joining us just minutes from now. All kinds of great stuff going on. We're going to break down the results. John Force, 152 victories. Force, this was dominant. Dominant victory by Force, back-to-back final rounds. What's going on with John Force? John Force Racing, this guy, he's back, baby. We're going to talk all about it. It's going to be great. Steve Torrence, dominance of the four-wide platform. Dallas Glenn, a first-time winner among a quad, a final-round quad of all rookie drivers. How great is that? And Steve Johnson in Pro Stock Motorcycle, what a great victory we're going to speak with. Here's the deal. Here's the schedule. Is everybody ready for the schedule? Later on today, we'll be back at 4 o'clock with Dallas Glenn. So don't go too far from however you watch on YouTube or wherever you're watching the show, but don't go far. 4 o'clock, we'll be back with a first-time winner, Dallas Glenn from KB Racing and Rad Torque Systems. Going to be great. Then tomorrow, Wednesday, 11 a.m., Steve Johnson. Be ready. It's going to get wild and wilder. Steve Johnson at 11, John Force at 2, as we're doing WFO two-a-days for the next couple of days. And then Thursday, we're going to have a Hidden Horsepower live on the Total Seal Facebook page. So that is going to be great. Speaking of Total Seal Piston Rings, one of our great sponsors, TotalSeal.com. And I mentioned the Hidden Horsepower Live happening on Thursday. We'll let you know about the time. I believe late afternoon, like 4 p.m., depending on where you are in the country. That's 4 p.m. East. But Total Seal fits the rings from stock eliminator, Formula One, bracket engines, whatever you're looking to do. Why don't you unlock some of that hidden horsepower in your engine? TotalSeal.com. Also, Marvin Rodak, RodaksCoffeeAndGrills.com. Everybody reaching out to me a lot at the race, like, hey, man, I didn't realize how next level this Rodak's coffee was. And I was like, well, that's what I've been telling you for about 10 years now. It's next level stuff. It's not the cheapest coffee you're going to get. If you're looking for cheap coffee, this is not it. If you're looking for next level gourmet coffee that's going to make you happy and, you know, blow your head off from time to time, if that's what you're looking for, 817-924-6821. That's Marvin Rodak, RodaksCoffeeAndGrills.com, Samtech.edu. In fact, Houston, Texas, the home of Samtech. Excited to see Brian, Linda, and Judson down there at Houston Raceway Park, presented by or powered by Pennzoil. But the courses are still going. EFI, Blockhead, CNC program, Motorsport EFI tuning, all going on. And then, of course, another school, but this one you can actually drive a race car. Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, the Dragster Adventure. They travel around the country racing dragsters, having a good time, setting up races, giving people the experience of a lifetime. Go to frankhawley.com. Big appreciation to Frank and Lana Hawley. Don't forget Nitro Fish, where you can get the 10th anniversary WFO Radio t-shirt and our own WFO store, where, get this, just recently posted the new WFO Radio side logo hats. Go to the store. We got a little link. You can click on it and get yourself a WFO hat. Started to see some of these at the racetrack this past weekend, and it's the best. Checking out the WFO hats on a couple of people out there. And Jock Allen, he was like, hey, man, can I get one of those hats? That is what I'm talking about. So all you fans of WFO, get yourself a WFO hat in the WFO store on WFOradio.com. That's a whole lot of WFOs. Now, I have a surprise here that I'm going to open on the air. But first, let's bring on the voice of the NHRA, or at least check out where he is. And he's walking into the shot, right? Like, look at this guy. The dramatic.
I was just playing the slot machine while I was waiting for it.
And how did you do? Did you win?
No, let's talk about something else.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this amazing dramatic moment that I'm about to reveal here on the show.
Mm.
This is something that is purchased in the WFO store on the website that people can go and get. And I'm going to open it. It's going to be a very dramatic opening here on the show.
Do we have dramatic music?
No, we do not have dramatic royalty-free music that I can play on Facebook and YouTube. You want to do something? You want to be the dun dun dun. Dun dun dun, dun 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 dun, dun dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun. The Warren Johnson book by Kelly Wade. It's finally here. It beat my
ear. Right on.
Isn't that great?
It is great.
It is great. I'm super excited. We're going to do the show right now, but look, I'm like surrounded by Warren Johnson stuff.
Awesome. Well, you know, being a Pontiac guy, that makes perfect sense.
Well, it was for many years. And look who it is. Look who it is. She's probably out there not happy about this, but there she is. Kelly.
Who Berkey wrote Kelly.
Yes. Let's see what it says about Kelly. Southern California native Kelly Wade entered the extraordinarily fast-paced and completely addictive world of drag racing as a reporter for the NHRA National Dragster in 2007. And there it is. I'll let everybody go back and read it themselves. But I am excited to learn something about Warren Johnson a little more. And there you go. But we had a great little race weekend this past weekend out there at the Four Wides. It was
It wasn't bad. I mean, it's like, you know, sunny days and good weather and good racing. The governor opening up the state for us on Friday so we could sell a whole lot more tickets on Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, yeah, I mean, if you like that kind of stuff, it's okay.
Now, did he open it for us or did he open it like for many reasons and we were one of many?
Not for me.
Good job, Alan.
Yeah, I, you know, personally called him and I said, hey, man, I'll buy you a beer. Do us, you know, we could use a little help here. And he said, oh, well, Alan, why don't you say something? Stamp, that was it. News release went out.
All joking aside, it was a life experience to be in the middle of that change, right? Like we're doing our thing. We thought one thing was the case from, you know, 1 hour to the next. No, they've opened it up. We're allowing people to come in tomorrow. They can bring their friends and also, you know, outdoor masking and just a lot of things changed from, you know, let's call it Thursday to Monday, right? Like we lived the experience. And I got to tell you, Alan, It was interesting to go through, but it felt great to that step by step clawing back to normalcy. That was another big step.
I agree, and I still, you know, I've said all along, I believe, you know, you take personal responsibility. If you still feel more comfortable or safer or more protected by wearing a mask when you're out and about, then wonderful. And you know, just because North Carolina changed doesn't mean every ordinance changed. You know, there were still. Pretty much every store I went to still had the signs up and still had the restrictions, and that's fine. I mean, you don't snap your fingers and make it all go away. You know, there are certainly times when I feel more comfortable if I have my mask on. But, you know, if I'm here in my shop, I'm alone, if I'm doing something, I'm not going to worry that much about it. But I think, you know, I think people need to make their own decision and take their responsibility. And it's nice to see, you know, the government stepping back a little bit and saying, hey, guys, you know, we've done what we needed to do and things are going in the right direction and we feel like we're getting ahead of this thing. So it's time to start loosening things up. I mean, you know, you and I talked about it a little bit on Sunday. I have no idea, you know, exactly how many people were there or how much walk-up ticket sales increased because that was basically the way to go. But we had a sizable amount of people in the place and it was good to see them all out there.
I agree. And it's just, it's a step-by-step. It's not going to just happen. It's a process. Everything is a process. Getting to this point was a process. I recall reading that to like, hey, if you want to get the JJ vaccine on the property, you can if you want. But, you know, I know how people are. They're a little cautious about everything. And it's a personal choice. So go ask the guy over there. Like, hey, what's the story with it? You know, but we're in a process. It's not like flipping a light switch. It's going to take us a little while, but I guess we'll know down in Houston, right? Because they are a little bit ahead of the game. They opened up fully, what, call it a month ago or so? Yeah, approximately. So it'll be an interesting experience. And yes, I have the mask on me at all times. Like, who am I around, right? Are these dirty people? I'm going to put it on, making my judgment about who I'm around, right? But it was still a very good experience and makes me feel great about the future, about where we're going. And then the racing, the real reason we're there was a spectacular, and the John Force victory and Steve Torrence domination, Steve Johnson. That was a good one given all that they have been through with Jock and then Dallas Glenn, the Pro Stock final in general, whichever way it went, it was going to be a good story.
Yeah. I just wish I'd have known which way it went when it actually went that way.
Yeah.
But when you're coming into a four wide final round, none of the four have ever won a race before. Then you know it's going to be a very special day for somebody. And, you know, for those who were there or anybody watching on NHRA.tv, you know that I blew the call in the final round. And I,
I don't know.
It really bugs me because it, you know, I talk all the time about, you know, I want to get it right. I'm always trying to learn. I'm always trying to, and in this situation, it was a combination of the computer having a glitch and me making a split decision. And I've actually thought about it. I spent a lot of time thinking about it while I was on the plane home, trying to figure out, okay, if this comes up again, how do I not make the same mistake? Because if anybody was there, I called Mason McGahey the winner. And then we go back and do the math. And it's like, no, it wasn't Mason. It was really Dallas Glenn. But what happened, and I'm not making excuses. I blew it, okay? 100% my fault. But what happened was Fernando Quadra Jr. left early. He got a red light and was well out in front. Therefore, he crossed the finish line first. Now, the computer knew the guy with the red light couldn't win, but it didn't know automatically just to move everything over one. So since Dallas crossed the finish line second, on my announcer screen, he came up as second place finisher, and it literally says second on the screen. But we didn't get a winner. We just had a second. And so my brain went, okay, he finished second. Who beat him? Look real quick at Troy Jr. Troy didn't beat him because he left behind him and ran 100 slower. Glanced at Mason's numbers. Mason had an 018 light to a 30. It was like a 54 to a 55. And my brain went, there it is. Mason won. So that's what I said. And then you go back and go look at the numbers, and it's like, oh, geez, when you look at the little bitty numbers out on the end, it was actually Dallas that won. But what the computer did was it didn't turn on a win light because it knew the red light couldn't win. And then when Dallas finished second, it made him second, and that was it. But he was second to the stripe, but he had actually obviously won the race because of the red light. And it's, you know, talking to Bob Rockmeyer, the guy who invented the CompuLink and the guy who does all the computer stuff, four wide is still fairly new.
Yes.
And I think this is something that hadn't come up yet. You know, even today, you know, things come up at the races and it's like, geez, in 50 years, we've never seen that before. And then they develop a policy or they make a rule so that the next time it happens, okay, guys, this is the call in that situation. And that's what happened here. This had not happened before. It hadn't come up. And it's like, oh, okay. So Bob now goes, okay, now I need to go explain to the computer program that if he goes red, now what you need to give me is, you know, second, third, become first and second, and that's what it'll be going forward. But I apologize to Chris McGahey. I haven't seen Mason, but I'm sure I'll see him this weekend, and I'll go by and see him. And I went by and I talked to Dallas Klein after the race was over, and I said, hey, man, I know. And he's like, hey. And everybody said, you know, the four wide is still confusing to them, and they were standing on the starting line looking at scoreboards thinking the same thing.
Yes.
The blinking number one, the solid number second. Dallas's number, he was in lane two. The number two was on solid. There was no blinking number.
Right.
Everybody on our starting line was going, okay, what does that mean? And my reaction was, that means Dallas was second, so who beat him? And just doing the math in my head as fast as I could possibly do it, I came up with the wrong answer. So anyway, I think, right. You know, I learned something from it. I know if that happens again, you know, catch your breath, take a minute, make sure you know what you're saying before you say the wrong thing. And, but congratulations to Dallas. It was cool. It was, you know, those guys obviously were very excited about it. You know, his fourth start ever in a pro stock car. I think the only guy that's beat him in the winner's circle is Jeg. But, you know, pretty impressive stuff. You know, when you get into a high pressure situation with a bright spotlight on you, you know, climbing into a car that's championship caliber, that's been winning races and that, you know, Jason had a career in. Okay, kid, now you got to prove that you can do it. And, you know, he's been solid on reaction time. He has had a couple of red lights. But, you know, that's a guy who's out there, young gun, you know, hitting a tree, just like, you know, Mason McGahey's had a red light and Fernando Quadra's had a red light. You know, these kids are going after it. And sometimes you go too far. But, no, it was, you know, exciting race. Greg certainly had the best car,
yes.
But this time wasn't able to close the deal. Erica was out early. And you know, after the second round, when you go into the final knowing you got four drivers out there that have never won before, you know it's going to be a pretty special day. It was.
Now, on the note, since we're starting off in Pro Stock, right? And how great is Pro Stock right now? We got 21 entries for Houston already. Aaron Strong throwing down a great round and winning, loading up Erica, his teammate, in the first round. Greg with the best car and that HendrickCars.com sponsorship. But he goes 080. Then you're 080, you're going to lose. And that's exactly what happened. What's
that? Yeah. You just can't do that. And it's... Pro stock has certainly seen a resurgence, especially when you go back 3 or 4 years ago and how many people are going, all right, you know, put up a headstone already. Pro stock's been dead for 10 years. It's over. Let's get by. Let's just move on. Yeah. And it's now coming back very strong. I think, you know, the Aaron Strong thing, I think, is a great story, because that's the same car that Vincent Nobile took to the final round in Atlanta the week before. It's the same car that Bruno Massel of NHRA and Fox Personality drives from time to time. And that is an absolute capable of winning every day it goes to the racetrack car that's available. If there's somebody, you know, a top sportsman racer, a fast bracket racer, somebody that has a license and has always thought about doing this, that's a deal right now. You call Richard and go, hey, do you have an extra car in, you know, pick your favorite race here? And if that thing's not already spoken for, that's a proven commodity. And hopefully we'll see another person or people along the course of the year decide to get their feet wet in pro stock and come out and, you know, get in not a car that's just going to show up and end up being 21st out of 21, but a car that literally is capable of winning the race if the driver can do what he need or she needs to do. So hopefully, yeah, you know, that'll get somebody else looking at pro stock. I think there's just a lot of opportunities out there.
Absolutely. It was just great stuff. A Mustang in the final round, right? The Quadra team with Frank Iaconio Power. Yes, okay. The Ford fans out there, well, it's not a real Ford engine. Well, look, you know, I'm a Pontiac guy, and those went away in the 1970s, and I just adapted, okay? When Butch Leal was out there running with his Pontiac Trans Am, it was corporate power, and I got used to it. So all you Ford people, root for your Mustangs, stop complaining, and the Quadras are your guys. They got three of them out there, but I want to go back. Didn't something funky happen in pro stock like 9 years ago where Greg and Erica were in the final round? I remember speaking with Joanne Knapp after the race was over, and she mentioned that something similar had happened with Greg. And she talked about John Knapp, and the, you know, he had to rip off a mask and was screaming, no, man, Greg won. But I don't remember the exact details. You might. And it was something four wide funky. And it happened like a decade ago when we first got there. Was it similar? Was it a red light? Do you remember? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember if it was a red light or not, but it was similar. It was a wind light malfunction where one wind light came on and one didn't. And, you know, you sit down, do the math, and you go back. Fortunately, you know, our NHRA on Fox guys, you know, put up the finish line camera and go, look, there it is.
Yeah.
You clearly can see this car out in front of, I mean, there's no doubt about who won the race. You can go back and look at all the numbers and they make sense. The only malfunction was the wind light. And I don't remember all of the circumstances in that race all those years ago, but I do remember that it was the same basic thing, that it was a wind light malfunction. I don't remember if it was a red light or not. But, you know, and again, something that you only do at that point, it was once a year. Now it's twice a year. Things are going to happen at a much slower rate. There are still things to this day that happen to wide racing when we go, never thought of that before. You know, we need to put a policy in place. You know, the discussion going on now about, and it hasn't happened yet, but the discussion going on now that, you know, I've been getting everybody to weigh in on top dragsters, right? What if this happens? What would be the correct call? And, you know, it hadn't happened yet. It will at some point. And a policy needs to be put in place. So, you know, they, at least the problem in this particular case, the problem is absolutely positively identified. And I'm sure that the fix is already in the works. It's just going to be a matter of telling the software, okay, look, here's what we got to do in this situation going forward. And hopefully that'll be the end of it.
The fix is in, says Alan Reinhart.
The other thing that was unique about the final round, you had all the engine builders.
Yes.
Right? I mean, McGehee obviously has got one of his engines out of Southwest Performance. Dallas Glenn is out of KB Racing, so that's got a Greg and Jason motor in it. Troy Jr. is one of the elite flagship cars, so that engine, you know, out of the Oklahoma shop. And then, as you mentioned, the Frank Iaconio powered Ford. And for anybody that wants to do the, you know, it's not really a Ford, look, a funny car engine is not really a Chrysler either. You know, I get all the time people, you know, well, that's a Toyota, but it's really got a Chrysler engine in it. No, it doesn't. It has a drag race specific nitro burning Hemi engine. It is based loosely on the architecture of the 426 Hemi. Absolutely. You know, that's where the distributor drive is. I get it. But there's not one part or piece on that engine that you're going to bolt onto a stock Hemi. There's not one stock Hemi part or piece that's going to bolt onto that engine. It is a design that has morphed over the years to be considered the best engine for burning nitro. And so everybody uses it, but it is a generic engine, custom made billet parts to burn nitro. It is not a 426 Hemi on any wild scale. The pro stock machines also have morphed to this is the design that works the best for a naturally aspirated fuel injected engine burning race gas with no power added. This is the design that works the best, and it now is being used in all of the different cars. Brzezinski still does some of the Dodge Hemi stuff, which has spark plugs that go through the valve covers. But let me tell you, that's about as much Hemi as a funny car Hemi is. It's just a completely drag race specific, custom built engine for that purpose. And you know, I'm fine with it. I'm as curious as anybody.
Right, you're the Ford guy. Would you rather not have
Mustang on the racetrack? If it puts a Mustang on the racetrack and it gets the Mustang people something to root for, even when you went back and looked at the last Ford specific engines that were running in Pro Stock, there ain't a part on there that would bolt to your stock Ford. They are all custom built race engines. They all, you know, over time, if the rules stay, there's one best way to do it. And that's where everybody's going to migrate to. You know, the DRCE3 and the latest generation Hemi cylinder heads are pretty darn close. One of them says Chrysler, one of them says DRCE. So what? It ain't a Chevy and it ain't a Hemi. It's a race engine designed for pro stock, and that's what they are. So pick your favorite body style and let's go racing and quit arguing about engines.
Well, exactly. And hopefully we get some of that going. And trust me, I think the first time one of those Quadra boys goes out there and wins a race with a Mustang, the Ford fans are going to be happy. And maybe they will or maybe they won't, but my opinion is that they will be happy and it'll come back. And I'm just super excited. Look at it this way, right? We got Dallas coming up at 4:00, everybody. So come back on WFO. We'll see you then and share the show because he's a great young kid. Crew member, worked his tail off, now gets a chance to drive and wins in his fourth time out. Like, come on, that's the story that everybody wants. That's the essence of pro stock, and you've got it now. And we got another race this weekend, and one of those other kids, Mason McGahey, I did speak with him after the race. He handled it, him and his dad. They both handled it. Oh, well, like, we'll go get him again. They understood. They saw the video. They understood. We're going to have ourselves a very fun season in pro stock. It is going to be great. Let's move over to, I guess, let's go to Funny Car, where John Force, dominant for my money, like in qualifying, going back to Atlanta, like all of a sudden, whoa, wait a second now. John Force is a threat to win the back-to-back races. The guy has got the job done, and his media center interview was awesome. He gave his Wally to Bruton Smith, and, you know, all of a sudden, we're in a world where John Force is a threat to win every race, and I'm liking it.
I figured the media center, if you had John Force and Steve Johnson, all you needed to do is go, there's the mic, and you could have left and gone and had a beer. Nobody would have missed you.
Plenty
to take care of it. Here's the crazy thing about Force. Number one qualifier, and as you mentioned, he dominated. Absolutely had the best car. When's the last time the number one qualifier won Funny Car?
I don't know. Going back to last year, 2019?
Sonoma, 2019. The Don Schumacher cars won all the races last year, had, I believe, eight or nine of the number one qualifying positions, but the number one qualifier never won. Sonoma 2019 was the last time that the number one qualifier won. And even going into the final, I'm looking at that going, kiss of death, right? I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's just there's a jinx on that number one qualifying spot. But 72-year-old John Force, not to be denied.
Exactly. How about this? Just over 5 decades, this man has won an NHRA national event. You know, first win, I guess, in 88, the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 10s, and now in the 20s, John Force has won a race, which, you know, is that a meaningful stat? I don't know who else has done it in the professional ranks. We'd have to dig into the archive, but staying
not power. Many.
Half a century worth. I mean, I know I'm cheating the math a little bit, people, because we're only at 2021 and he got in at the very end of the 1980s. But that's what's fun about stats, right? We're cheating the stats. 5 decades, this guy has been a winner in the NHRA.
And he really looked like the old John Force. You know, the team had the car clicking. They had, you know, they ran well in qualifying, ran well every round on race day. It wasn't one of those where, you know, well, three guys smoked the tires and da-da-da-da-da, one guy went red, so he kind of backed into it. He had a great race car, and he drove it very well. And that was about as simple as it can get. I actually spoke to Austin Coyle last night. He called me, and we're chit-chatting, catching up about stuff. But he said, I'm not sure I ever saw John drive better. He said he was, you know, he was on the lights. He was keeping the car in the groove. He was doing what he needed to do to win the race, and he won the race. So I don't think it's going to be his last win on the season. I think really right now that, you know, they look like they're on to something. They had some personnel changes over there. And, you know, maybe they finally like clicked and found, you know, the right personality combination of everything that, that, you know, gets all the guys working together, you know, as well as I do. And it doesn't matter what sport it is. You can get the 10 most talented guys in the planet and put them all together. And if they don't click, they're just not going to win.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes you just change one guy, or sometimes you change the coach, or something, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, and it's the same guys, the same basic, but you just have to get, you know, you just have to get all the personalities together. You have to get everybody believing in everybody. It's a chemistry thing. And it's talked about over and over and over again, but there's no real scientific way to explain it. You just have to get the right combination. You have to get everybody to have the right mindset. And right now it looks like John's got that.
Two things I wanted to mention regarding Force is, first of all, Danny Hood, you know, if he's not the youngest Nitro crew chief, he's close to it, in a job that is typically reserved for the most experienced of people out there. You look across the Nitro ranks, and most of the folks are older. John Force has been saying, you know, next generation, these young kids for a long time. And, you know, Danny is his son-in-law, so keeping it in the family. And maybe that's what it takes, you know, that trust. It's like, hey, this is a family business right here. And Danny is like young, relatively young, definitely younger than me. And it's interesting to see him and Tim Fabrizi out there running the show for Force. That's part one. And part two, all that stuff, you know, cheating in, going in deep, getting amped up. Talked to Force about it in the media center. He definitely did it in the final round, but seemed to be avoiding that in route to the final round. In the final round, everybody does it, but in route to the final round, knowing and understanding that being in lane four was where he wanted to be, to keep it simple, you know, lanes one and lanes four, it's much easier, as we've talked about over the years. It just seems like, you know, maybe, and this is pure speculation, I'll ask John tomorrow, maybe, you know, he'll listen to Danny, because Danny's in the family. Like, it's as simple as that, right? This is his family members. Like, hey, we're
done. He's finally starting to listen. Yeah, that's possible. But they just have it going on over there right now. I mean, they certainly had flashes of brilliance the last couple of years. You know, obviously when Brian Corradi was over there, they won a couple of races. You know, he got his 150th, and they won Indy again, and they had a really good race car. But, you know, convincing John that you need to do what I tell you to do, not what you think is best, is not an easy task, you know, for the guy that A, owns the team. So you really can't tell him what to do if he doesn't want to do it your way. He's going to do whatever the hell he wants because he owns the team. And the guy that's got so much experience and has won so much that literally believes most of the time that his way is the right way, because look, it's worked for 50 years. But you know, times change and things change. And I know that was a source of friction a little bit between Ryan and John. And I mean, not to the point where, you know, somebody's going to throw somebody, you know, a wrench at somebody, or somebody's going to punch somebody in the trailer, but it's just, you know, Brian, you know, when Brian tells Antron Brown, this is what I need you to do, Antron says, yes, sir, whatever you need, that's what I'm going to do. But when Brian would tell John, this is what I need you to do, John would oftentimes think his way was better. And so that's what he would do. And it was definitely a little point of frustration and friction between those two. But, and again, not, you know, not somebody's going to get punched out. It was just an annoyance between the two. And something like that keeps that perfect chemistry from happening and from forming and from going forward. So, you know, if they've got it all in place now, then good on them. It's good for NHRA when John Force is running well.
Yes.
I don't care if he wins a championship. I don't care. But it's good for NHRA when John Force is running well, simply because he is the biggest name in our sport. And if people look at standing and go, oh, well, John's ninth in points, and, you know, he hasn't won a race in 2 years, and they kind of go, eh. But when they know that John Force is running well, and there's a chance that if I go to the races or if I turn on NHRA on Fox, I'm going to get to see John win, that's good for NHRA.
Yeah, I think a couple of points. Let's remember why Brian Corradi went to that team. Self-stated reason to upload all of his knowledge into Danny Hood, who he considers a bit of a son to him. That was what he said. Like, I want to make sure Danny knows everything that I know. And, you know, I guess mission accomplished, right? Except Danny might have some sway with Force, number one, because his family.
Austin Coyle told me last night that when Danny first joined the team, you know, obviously he was dating Ashley, ended up being married with ended up marrying Ashley and still is. But he said when Danny joined the team, very early on, they realized this is a really smart guy. He certainly has got enough intelligence to be a crew chief at some point. It's just a matter of gaining some experience and being motivated to do it. And, you know, they knew that that was going to take some time. You know, when I think Alan Johnson right now is pretty well regarded as, you know, if not the best ever top fuel crew chief, he's certainly in the conversation. But people forget that, you know, the first, he didn't qualify the first, whatever it was, three or four races he went to. You know, didn't win a round the first couple of races after he started qualifying. Didn't win a race for 2 years, literally. It took him 2 years once he started becoming a crew chief before he won his first race. So it doesn't happen overnight, no matter how smart you are, no matter what your background is. It just takes time to build the experience and, you know, to get the motivation to get out there and do it. And it looks now like Danny has got all those ingredients in place. And he's also, again, got a pretty good support team around him.
Yes. Well, exactly. It's been pretty amazing to watch. Also, Mike McIntyre and Terry Haddock and the whole four-wide thing. I know there's haters or people who just don't appreciate it, but those stories happen at four-wide, right? Like the teams that aren't necessarily going to win. And think of all the countless interviews that I did with the team that crossed second, because they get to have a moment. Krista Baldwin, we'll talk Top Fuel in a second, but like it just gives a little extra spotlight to some folks that maybe don't always get it and gives them that feeling of advancing and the experience and the whatever it takes to get there more often. That's a good thing. And I thought it worked out well.
And for those of you that hate it, we're done for the year. Okay. So let's talk about something else.
Exactly. Exactly. People that want to talk about the things you hate instead of the things you like. But that is a different story altogether. Have I got everything? Well, Alexis DeJoria and Cruz Pedregon and JR Todd, like everybody doing a great job. And you got the cruiser, you got Alexis, you got JR, like everyone, but DSR was represented in the final round. Just a good final round for Force to win, though. He's the closest thing that we have to a Dale Earnhardt, or maybe even beyond Dale Earnhardt status, like Dale Earnhardt to NASCAR, John Force to NHRA. It's a good question, but there's no doubting the way the crowd reacts when he drives by on a scooter. There's nobody that drives emotions the way John Force does.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we had to touch on a couple other things just before we put Funny Car to bed. One, Alexis had a really good car. I mean, she also didn't just stumble and bumble her way to the final round. She qualified second or third. She was the only one that really got down the track on Friday night when everybody was struggling with the racetrack. You know, in Atlanta, I think in Atlanta they had a good car. They just had the body issue with the light, so right, they didn't get their final qualifying run and didn't get to run round one at all. But they came in here with a little bit of chip on their shoulder and ran well, so I expect to see more out of that. And then I can't believe you're going to smooth through and put Funny Car to bed and not talk about Bubba Wallace's snot.
I didn't. I went home. I was in a bar. I watched the whole piece on Fox Sports One. But yeah, Bubba was having sinus issues, apparently. And yeah, it was a tough call. Like, you got Bubba on the starting line. You got Kyle Busch on the starting line. You got Dan. Who am I going to talk to? And the reason I talked to Bubba was because he seemed to be the most like wowed by what he was seeing. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is real. And then he said that quote about his snot just coming out of his head. And it's like, yeah, welcome to drag racing. That's part of it.
And then he says on the microphone, don't tell anybody I said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
he and Daniel Hemric came out as guests of Toyota. They did a little media thing on Thursday with Sean Langdon with JR Todd, where they came out, you know, they warmed the cars up back in the pits and then came up with them. And the two cars did a side-by-side burnout with Daniel and Bubba in the middle, and they both just went, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And what I thought was the real fun part about it, because I was there, got to be a part of it, but when they backed the cars up after the burnout, and I got Bubba and Daniel, I went over to Sean Langdon's car, and I said, okay, look at this. The throttle stop obviously is on for the burnout. I said, that's how much throttle was open. You know, and anybody that's ever seen, watch the butterflies when they do a burnout, you can barely see them move, because that's how much it takes. I said, that's how much throttle he was using. And I said to Bubba, how much of a burnout could you do with your car with that much throttle? He said, the engine would die. I said, wait till you hear one of these things wide open. We took the stop off and went, okay, from there to there. And he's like, oh my God. And then, of course, you got to experience it Friday night. With NASCAR, of course, not doing qualifying and practice and all that stuff, the guys don't have to be there nearly as early. And that's why, you know, there were a number of them that came out. Ryan Newman was on the property also on Saturday. So, you know, it was cool. It was cool to have some of the NASCAR guys come out and, you know, just kind of stick their toe in the water a little bit. And as I said, when we were there, I really hope, and I don't know what the calendar's like, I probably should have looked by now, but I really hope that when they're racing in Indy, if we've got the weekend off, that some of our guys will go over and, you know, kind of get a taste of their world a little bit. Because, you know, it's motorsports, right? We all just like cars in Indy. We like loud, fast stuff. And, yeah. You know, to have those guys come over and get a real feel of what 11,000 horsepower is like, I think it's great. And, you know, our guys need to do the same thing. We need to go over, because I think if you watch a NASCAR race on TV, you don't get quite as much appreciation as if you get to go, especially if you can go into the pits, in the garage, and see what they're doing. You know, that's something that the average fan can't do at NASCAR, but the average fan can do it at HRA. And that's why so many of the NASCAR fans go. I mean, how many times do you, NASCAR fans come to Charlotte and go, so I can actually walk out there by the haulers?
It happened this weekend. It happened. There were people in the stands.
A wristband or a ticket or no. I can actually, yes. And, you know, once they understand that our wide open pit policy and our, you know, every ticket is a pit pass, and I think that, you know, sways a few of them. Not to hate NASCAR. We're not asking anybody to alienate NASCAR. We're just asking them to give us a look. And, you know, we would like to be on your radar. You know, NASCAR comes to Charlotte twice a year. We come to Charlotte twice a year. I don't think four times a year is too often to go to a race. So I think you guys can fit in both. We're not asking anybody but choose. We're just asking, you know, come give us a look.
Absolutely. And you got HendrickCars.com now on Greg Anderson for the rest of the year. You got Rowdy Energy on with J.R. Todd and Sean Langdon and those guys. So the cross-pollination, it just makes sense. It's not all the same fans. People think, oh, it's all the same fans. It's not all the same fans. But, hey, I do have a couple of things that I just want to, you know, I watched the package with the Thursday deal when they were driving the Toyota Supras down the track. Were you there for that?
Of course.
Okay. So I was eating dinner. I was in a bar. I just noticed. Did Sean Langdon and J.R. Todd let Bubba Wallace beat them in a drag race in Toyota Supras? Did that happen?
Do you know Sean Langdon and J.R. Todd?
Yeah, I know them.
Think you could get one of them to throw a race?
Well, no. No. So Bubba Wallace did beat them? Because, you know, the angle of the camera, it made it seem like Bubba beat them in a drag race, which is...
Well, I think, and I'm not making excuses, but one or the other, I don't remember which one's which. One of them double stepped and had like a 3-something light, and the other one knocked the tire off of it at the starting line. But I don't think anybody was going down there and lifting to let Bubba Wallace win a drag race.
I know. I'm saying it in a way like, hey, drag racers, you let this round track guy come over and whoop you on a straight track, like, that's not good.
Yeah, no, I think
that's like the Flying Ryan. If me beat him in the Mustangs, that's going to be a problem for Flying Ryan, because, you know, he challenged me to a drag race, and if he lets that happen, that's not good.
I think that JR and Sean had about as much intention of letting Bubba win that race as Erica did when she raced Kurt Busch in Pro Stock in Gainesville a few years ago when he was driving. You know.
Yes.
Yeah, Eric is really going up there going, okay, let the NASCAR guy win. It'll be good for PR. Yeah, right.
No, that's my point.
Let the NASCAR guy go back and explain, I got beat by NHRA's girl.
Yeah, he did. And that was just up on Twitter. One other thing, someone mentioned the Friday night, the qualifying on YouTube was a really good idea and worked really well. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on that as well. It was free on YouTube. It was on Facebook. We're always talking about, like with this show right now, like share the show, your friends who you're always telling about drag racing, you know, they never get to see it. Let's see it. That was a perfect way for people to see it and have it put in front of them. And the feedback that I'm getting was very positive.
Yeah. Most of the stuff I saw was positive too. I don't know how often or when, or if that'll even happen again. You know, obviously if there is a Friday night Fox qualifying show, then there's a Friday night Fox qualifying show. But on a night, and that was the case in this case was at Charlotte, there was no Friday night Fox qualifying show. So is there something else we can do idea came up. And if I'm not mistaken, it was actually, social media Nikki who said, why don't we put it on Facebook? And everybody went, why don't we put it on Facebook?
I don't.
And then at that point, it's like, okay, well, because Loans was in there to do the Friday stuff anyway, he's already like semi-recruited for it. And then Tony was there, so he jumped in. And, you know, we ended up going over into the TV booth instead of the announcer booth, which at Charlotte is not a bad thing. So you know, it just, it worked out, man. It was fun and it was kind of laid back and we were kind of goofing a little bit. And, you know, Tony was wrong. And
yes, you're not letting him
apologize. I had to apologize even though he was wrong. And by the time I found out that he was wrong and I was right, well, you know, he said, okay, fine, I'll apologize to you. But, you know, like in front of Brian and Mike, the sound engineer, when mine was on Facebook in front of however many people were watching on Facebook. So I feel a little bit like I was taking advantage of there. But if you go to NHRA's YouTube page today, or you can go on Twitter and, you know, hit me and follow the link, you will see exactly what did happen and why I was right.
I like that. I like it. And I checked that out. I gave it a like today. It was a great job over there in Clay Milliken's pit area, and it was pretty cool. You know, Tony got called out on our Patreon show yesterday on Ignition about the art of deep staging. When Cruz went trip zip, Tony said it was the art of deep staging as opposed to a bad job of red lighting, which, you know, trip zip. That's lucky.
Yeah, no, I mean, no question. The top light was out. I mean, he wasn't even pretending. I'm not 100% sure the car wasn't rolling. You know, in Charlotte, you can't see from the booth, so I couldn't swear to that one way or another. But I just, you know, and I'm not bagging on Tony, but it's like when John goes to EPO, he's like, oh, yeah, he went deep. And, you know, when his brother goes perfect, goes, the art of deep staging. I just thought it's hilarious.
Deep staging, exactly. It's like, all right, all right.
And the other little Clay Milliken note, just because we brought that up.
Yes.
When I went by on Saturday to ask about that, and, you know, I wanted to know, I actually had sent Mike Clover a text message the night before and said, hey, did it blow up? And he said, no, I heard a piston, da da da. And I, okay, I'll come by tomorrow. And so, you know, Clay, the Parts Plus team, they do a great job. They've got a really strong running car, but they don't have a budget like the Coletta team or like the Schumacher team do. So they got to be smart with their parts. And Clover said he's watching that thing, and when it fireballed, he just went, oh, because, again, you know, it ain't like they got 25 engines under the bench. They've got to be smart with what they've got. And he said they're watching a replay, and he heard me say, I don't think it blew up. It certainly was on fire. There's no doubt it was on fire, but I don't think it blew up. I think it was just on fire. And he said he was down on the starting line, and he said, oh, please, God, let Reinhardt be right for once. Why'd you have to put in those last two words?
Yeah. Why'd you get me? Why you got to
name? Did you just like leave it at let Reinhardt be right?
No,
we had a little chuckle over that. But anyway, all is well.
Well, it's good. It's good. All right. Speaking of Top Fuel, let's move over there because we, you know, we got to preview Houston as well. We're heading that way. It's going to be great. But so much awesome racing. Team Capco. Wow. The Capco boys, 6 of 7. Steve in the media center. He goes, you know, every time you say like 4 of 5, 5 of 6, 6 of 7, he goes, it's like giving me anxiety, like the pressure I'm feeling. But whatever it is about four wide, Steve Torrence and Richard Hogan and Bobby Lagana just figured it out. On this particular edition, Steve was able to get through, you know, Mike Salinas, Artie Allen, and Doug Foley. Doug Foley, the story we were talking a little bit earlier about, like it gives an opportunity to a slightly second-tier team to take advantage, and he certainly took advantage of Mike Salinas's reaction time first round. Second round, Steve Torrence got beat. Antron Brown won the quad, but Steve was there. Of course, Krista Baldwin was also there, which was a great story and love talking about Krista. But in the final round, you got Antron, you got Steve, you got Josh Hart, you got Brittany, you got four killer cars there. And who pulls out the rabbit? 0:34 reaction time for Steve. The guy's a killer. 371, 6 at 329, wins again. And now it's 6 of 7, four wides. Sweeps the four wide season. And I've got a great idea. You want to hear it?
Sure.
There should be a bonus for sweeping the four wide races, and it should be brought to you and sponsored by Champion Spark Plugs.
Because one race is Denzel and one race is NGK?
Absolutely. So let's just get another spark plug company in there and just confuse the whole thing. 50 the grand.
The champion sweep. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can see that, I guess. Yep. You know, Steve had a great car. Brittany had the best car. Absolutely, positively, Brittany Force had the best car. Qualified number one, set both ends of the track record. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm thinking going into the final, I really figured, you know, Brittany certainly had the car to beat. Steve wasn't exactly like, you know, way behind. But I didn't think there was any chance whatsoever that the winner would come from lanes 1 and 2. And I don't mean any disrespect to Josh Hart or Antron Brown. It's just that the other two cars had been running that well all weekend. And, you know, it came down to that. You know, Brittany was up 40 something on the light. Steve was 30 something. He outran her 100th and he ended up with the win. But Brittany is going to win. She's got a great car. And I think when she breaks through, she's going to win more than one before it's all over with. You know, Antron certainly ain't going anywhere. Josh Hart, you know, they're playing the same game that they played down in Gainesville, you know, and that is we are going to go down the track. We're going to make clean runs. We're not going to qualify number one. We're not going to set the track record, but we're not going to be a tenth and a half back. We're going to go down a racetrack and make a clean run. And if you bobble, if you pedal, if you smoke the tires, or even if you're a little bit late, we're going to outrun you. You know, if you pull up next to them and you're going to run 68, you're going to win the race. But don't think you're going to be able to run 380 and get away with it. They're not going to let you do that. And that's the philosophy that took them to the winner's circle in Gainesville. That's the philosophy that took them to the final round here. I had a bit of a problem in the final round, but still, Josh Hart, you know, when Josh Hart shows up, everybody knows he's there. Right. And I think that's when, and we've talked about it, not recently, but we've talked about it before. At NHRA, when you do well and people aren't surprised, that's the biggest compliment you can get. When you go out there and you make a final round and people go, whoa, hey, Joe Costello in the final round. Okay. Yeah, good on him. But when people go, oh, look, Joe's in the final round. Okay. Who else was there? And, you know, it's just people are not surprised when Josh Hart runs well because of what Ron Douglas, what that team has done over the last few years, even before they were exclusively working for Josh Hart. But no, it was a fun day in Top Fuel. You know, we had, you know, Krista was so excited. Doug Foley, who got the round win or got to advance, you know, he's playing a home game. He's got so many friends and family and folks there, and those guys certainly looked good, looked solid. But just Brittany, I think the funniest thing happened, and I haven't been able to figure out who told him, but David Grubnick came up in the tower between the semifinals and the final round. And he's like, where's Josh? Like, oh, man, what's up? Who has lane choice? You do. Are you sure? Yes, David. You ran 371. Steve had run 372. I believe it was in the quad in front of him because he and Brittany didn't run in the same quad in the semi. And he says, but we didn't win. He says, we got there second. So what? He says, well, you know, somebody told me, and I don't know who. I said, somebody told me that, you know, if you don't win, you don't have lane choice. And they loved lane four and didn't want to get out. And right. It's like, no, David, you have lane choice. Well, are you sure? And made Josh get the policy manual out. And go, look, right here, black and white, here's what it says. He's like, okay. And I could never figure out who told him. And I really thought, you know, Richard Hogan or one of the Capco guys, because you know how close those guys are, right? There's no hatred whatsoever between the two. You know, Richard Hogan and David Grubnick both live in Montana. So, you know, they're the only two crew chiefs on NHRA, I believe, that live in that part of the world. And they're friends, and there's no issue between them. And I really figured somebody over there was yanking their chain, but if it was, nobody would admit to it. But it was just funny that David comes up and says, are you sure?
Well,
yes, we're all sure.
What's funny is that the other side of that situation, I was on the starting line right before the race, and Ron Douglas comes over to me and says, Joe, I need you to do something for me. And I'm like, yeah, what do you got? He goes, I don't know who's got lane choice or where we've got lane choice. And you may recall, I was like, hey, Ron Douglas wants to know. So I guess the word didn't get out about lane choice for the final round because Ron didn't know either. Now that you're telling me David didn't know, Ron didn't know either. And I was like, you know, not you. You go whatever's left. And he laughed. He's like, all right, we'll go to wherever's left. But that's just interesting that two of the crew chiefs in the final round didn't really know what the lane choice situation was.
Well, Dave knew that he had the quickest car. But like I said, somebody had told him that, no, because you finished second and didn't win your quad, you lost your lane choice over that. Wow. And it was kind of, and apparently the question came up in Vegas as well, somewhere in the funny car ranks. And I don't know exactly what the story was, but when after Dave went back out and then somebody said, yeah, somebody was asking about that a couple weeks ago in Vegas too. So, you know, low ET is lane choice. It doesn't matter if you finish first, if you finish second, low ET is lane choice. If you advance and you had low ET, it's yours.
Let's talk a little bit about Krista Baldwin, though. Facebook user, unidentified Facebook user, wants to know who supports or funds Krista Baldwin. And that's a great question. So what I would say is they are looking for sponsorships and partnerships. She's running a part-time season right now, but obviously she is capable. The team is capable. They are looking for more sponsorship. And that's where, you know, hopefully someone steps up. She said the emotion of the moment was incredible. That's what it's all about. I think about Tony Jones after winning Atlanta in Super Street. That's what we need, people to express how meaningful it is and to see the Greek on the starting line so happy and all of that, like a new a new birth of energy for that team. And the fact that she ran an 85, Bobby Lagana and Bobby and Dominic and those guys took the car into their shop. They went wing to wing on it and made it as close to what they have. It's basically a second Nitro Ninja is what Bobby had said. And, you know, you could call it a Capco car, but it's a little different because it's, you know, it's not a brand new chassis, as I understand it. But they're trying to set her up for success and she can get the job done. And so what are we going to do for the Greekette out there to get her to more races? Because clearly it's a great story.
Well, you know, she did herself a lot of good with A, the performance, and then B, the personality. You know, anybody that saw her and saw how enthusiastic she is and how outgoing she is, I think would realize that, you know what, that's a face that could be in front of my brand and would certainly help me. You know, they are getting some help from Strange Engineering, as Greek has for 150 years. It still has Lucas on the side of it. And, you know, when Forrest told Greek he's got a lifetime contract, I don't know if that, you know, granddaughtered in Krista, but I think they're still getting some help there. And, you know, they do it on a fairly conservative budget. And, you know, again, they're not going to go out there and run low ET, but they're going to go out there. They've got a good looking car. They've got a good presentation. It goes down the racetrack. And that's what you need to do to impress a sponsor. Like, look, you could be associated with us. And they've got all of that in place. So it certainly wouldn't hurt anybody's feelings, I don't think, if she was able to get some financial help and come to some more races. But, you know, just right now, the same group that has always helped the Greek come out there to, you know, six races or eight races a year or whatever he was doing are the ones that are making it possible for Chris.
But in the end, it was Steve Torrence who won the race again. And Steve is, dude's tough, man. What are you going to say about Steve Torrence? Dude's tough. Like, he's as good as it gets. And I think what his success is, and he said it in the media center, was that, like, I just make it as simple as possible. I do my job only and leave other people to do their job. I go up, I stage the car, I see yellow, I stomp the gas as quickly as is possible. I hold it as straight as is possible. And whatever happens, happens. And boy, that formula is working well for Steve Torrence.
Yeah, they've got good people over there. They've got a very solid budget. You know, they cycle parts in and out in a hurry. That car never goes up to the starting line with, you know, used this or marginal that. It's always got A plus new stuff on it. And that certainly is an advantage. And they're clicking. You know, they are doing a heck of a job, and they have been now for the last 4 or 5 years.
Simple as that. Chuck says, Shirley mentioned in Charlotte that she would entertain the thought of getting back inside a Top Fuel car. Can you even imagine? I love the idea of it, but that's like teasing us, I think. You know, just like the NHR April Fool's joke that Schumacher and Coletta were going to race each other. Don't tease me, man. Don't tease me with stuff like that. If it's happening, I want to see it, but I don't know. I feel like it's a tease.
Well, I can tell you this. I think if Shirley had the opportunity, that she would certainly give it a run. I think she still has the competitive drive. She still has a competitive spirit, and she still thinks she can get it done. And I'm certainly not going to argue with her. You look at all the success that she had when she had not a great big huge budget, but just a decent budget and going out there and making it happen. I think she still has a competitive spirit. So do I think that it's a real possibility? No. But do I think if the right thing came along that Shirley would seriously give it a shot? Yes, I do.
Yes. And so would Garlitz. And and maybe that's why, you know, we got to set up the Clash of Titans. Right. You wonder who got these. Guess who got these?
Don't forget to bring them to Houston.
No, I'm not bringing them to Houston. Houston's going to have to be your own thing. These things, they're a real pain to get on the plane. All right, let's talk about the other winner. Any final thoughts about Top Fuel, Alan? Anything you wanted to say before we get into the Lucas Oil ranks and things that I did not see because I was off in the media center? So you're going to kind of give me some insight into the final rounds, and then we'll talk Houston. Any final thoughts, Top Fuel?
No, I think we covered Top Fuel. All we got to do now is talk about what's the name of two wheels.
Yes, Steve Johnson. Steve Johnson going to be on 11 a.m. tomorrow. He sat down after the winner's circle. I mean, I didn't even know that he sat down and had this conversation with Wally. It was great. But I'm so happy for Steve for all of the extra stuff. You know, Steve, for the last 5 years, that has been 7 years since his win and the struggles. And now with a four valve cylinder, clearly the right decision by the NHRA, that 198, 199, 197, very annoying stuff. Now I got 201, 202, 203. What a difference. But Steve Johnson showed it's not all about mile per hour. Quickest Suzuki on the planet. Got that, what is it, monster cylinder head. and he's got himself a quick and fast bike, and he's going to be a threat all year long, I think.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch Steve once he realized, and I find it funny that, you know, we always knew that, you know, Steve was a salesman, Steve was a promoter, Steve was a guy, Steve wasn't necessarily the mechanic. But when he started trying to do the stuff himself because he simply couldn't afford to rent the engines or you know, get the high-priced help anymore, how much he had to learn. And he'd been working with Chris McGahey. He'd gotten a lot of advice from a lot of people, but he really credits Chris McGahey for being a go-to guy, you know, if he's got questions, if he's got things he's not sure of. And, you know, whether it's a V8 or whether it's a four-cylinder, engine, it's an air pump, right? How much air can you get in and out? And then how efficiently can you burn the fuel and make it happen? But the things that Steve has learned about, you mean that really makes a difference? It's like, yes, Steve, that's why everybody pays attention to it. Oh, I didn't know that. And now he is starting to get that, you know, all of these details really do make a difference. And he's paying so much attention to details, and the performance shows it. But it was, you know, all those 202, 203, they were still coming from the V-twin bikes. So, you know, the Suzuki's, the four-valve Suzuki is certainly strong. It was good to see Joey Gladstone get into the Denso 200-mile-an-hour club, making him the eighth member. So that officially closes out membership there. But, no, it's really competitive out there right now. And, you know, Steve in the final round, again, I was a little surprised, but not stunned, because, as you said, he had been running well. He hadn't been on the big mile an hour, but he certainly had been running good ETs and making good, clean runs, and that's what it's all about.
Exactly. And all they had been through with Jock. And I don't know if you saw, I think you did see.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Moment.
Every crew member that was on the starting line went over, and, you know, a moment with Jock on the starting line. It's like, you know, Jock shouldn't be here. And Steve talked about it. Like, if you spend more than 21 days on a ventilator, your chance of living is like less than 10%. That was, I'm paraphrasing a quote he said in the media center. And Jock was on a ventilator for like 24 days or something. And he's, not only is he back, but he's out there, he's working, he's doing his thing. Like, the guy shouldn't even be with us. And he is. And Steve was in the hospital every day doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I think back to the rivalry with Matt Smith, and to get this win, it's just good. It's good for the category. Steve's got fans. He's a multi-time U.S. Nationals winner, and the anybody can win aspect is back now, and just great for Steve Johnson. And I don't know, though, it was a little weird that he sat down and had that conversation with Wally. I got to challenge him about that when I talked to him. Like, I don't know if you saw it, but it was pretty hysterical.
Steve Johnson, a little weird. Yeah, nobody's ever thought that before.
No one's ever thought that before.
Steve Johnson needs to send Matt Smith a thank you card, because Matt Smith calling him out.
Yes, challenged.
Really what started the whole, you know, calling him a hobby racer. And Matt's going, you know, do you know how hard we work? Do you know how many hours we put in the shop? Do you know what we do to be this fast? And you don't do any of that. And you're wondering why we're faster than you. It's because we do this full time, all the time, and you don't. And once Steve started realizing this is how much work it takes to go fast, he certainly is not afraid of the work. But once he realized, and I really believe that Matt motivated him when he told him, look, here's the reason you don't win. It's because you don't put in the effort. You know, if you don't do the work at the shop, you are not going to be fast at the track. It's as simple as that. But I really think that Matt motivated him. And like I said, I still think, you know, Steve should send him a, you know, I don't know, an Amazon gift card or something.
Exactly. You should buy him the Warren Johnson.
Not going to happen, but
you know, the season continues, and it's great to see Joey Gladstone. Great story as well, considering the crash in the 200 mile per hour club and all of that. And I went over and talked to him. I was like, oh yeah, now you run 200. You're too good for your friends, huh? And he's, you know, what a great kid. When his time comes, it's going to be really good for the sport as well, because he's got that, you know, young, fresh attitude. Eddie Krawick loves him. Another thing I got for you, Alan, I talked to Krawick, and I was like, hey, 203, what's up with that? He goes, watch out, there's more coming. So all these engine combinations are brand new, Alan. Like, what's possible? Are we going to see 204? Are we going to see 205 in the right conditions when they sort these things out? And I hope so. I hope NHRA doesn't pull anybody back, because we know, you know, 203, 205, like, people are loving what they're seeing.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know. I'm not arguing with Eddie at all, but I can tell you that Z-Max Dragway is a mile-an-hour friendly drive, and the wind was negligible, but what was there was a little bit of a side tailwind, so it certainly wasn't hurting anything. You know, conditions were very good to run mile an hour, especially on the motorcycles there at T-Max. So when we go to Houston, I'm not sure what we're going to see for, you know, atmospheric conditions. You know, Houston can be really fast, or Houston can be really humid, or Houston can be, you know, give me a snorkel so I can get to my car. But we're going to find out, you know, as we go to some of the other racetracks, because the weather conditions there were pretty good. The correction factor was like about 103, 104 most of the weekend, which is pretty good. And again, it's a very mile an hour friendly track, and the conditions just seem to suit it. So no, I'm good with more 200 mile an hour runs. It's, I wouldn't want to go to a nitro event and not see somebody go 300.
Right.
And I wouldn't want to go to a pro stock motorcycle event and not see somebody go 200. Now, I don't need to see them go 225, but you know, the 200, the 201, the 2, great, bring it on. And the more people that do it, the better.
I like it. All right, other winners. Top alcohol dragster, it was Rachel Meyer and Sean Bellemere in Funny Car, four wide for the second time ever. Great to see Rachel go out there and get the win. And Bellemere, that was a, you know, quad of doom, as we had said in the final round. And he had done such a great job. I loved the alcohol cars four wide, and I support as much four wide as is possible. I know that we don't have enough Top Fuel Harleys to do it, because it would only be two rounds of racing for the most part. But the concept of as much as is possible, I'm all for that. And I think it paid off for the alcohol cars big time.
Yeah, I think it was a good show. I think it was very interesting that three of the four finalists in Charlotte were also in the final in Vegas. So, you know, those drivers obviously thought that, hey, it's fun. And B, it's not like we don't have a competitive edge. It's not, you know, something that means I can't win, because they trekked across the country to make it happen. All the dragster drivers didn't come across. I do think we need to send a shout out to Joey Severance. So he was there. You know, when last we saw that car, was laying on its side in Atlanta, and it was sliding through the shutdown area. But they loaded that thing up. They headed to Richie Crampton's place, which is Indy Speed Shop, front halved it, got the thing completely back together, new body work and all the stuff they needed to do. And they were there. They didn't have the weekend that they really wanted, but there was a lot of effort put in to make it that far. Jasmine Salinas was there with her brand new car, which, oh, by the way, also was put together at Richie Crampton's shop. So, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm right now in the alcohol group. And, you know, the four wides, I think, was great. I think that it was something that was new for them. You know, I think there were a lot of head scratching going on. Not a whole lot of funny cars opted to make the trek all the way out to Las Vegas and do it the first time. But after those that didn't go watched it one time, we had a whole lot better funny car inventory when we ended up down in Charlotte. And again, twice a year is plenty. I'm not lobbying for more four wide races, but I'm with you. When we go four wide racing, let's see how many classes we can go four wide racing with. And, you know, we'll work forward. Certainly Factory Stock Showdown would be fun.
Yes.
I don't know. And I don't know. Just throwing it out. Could you do a Hemi Challenge four wide? A standalone Hemi Challenge?
Yes.
I don't know.
But could you do all kinds of stuff.
Things, you know, let's, and you know, the one thing that 2020 taught us is we've never done that before is gone. You know, now it's like, let's talk about it. I mean, it may sound like a crazy idea, but let's talk about it. Whether it works or whether it doesn't work, there's a whole lot more stuff on the table now that's open for discussion that didn't used to be.
All right, before we talk about the Lucas Oil winners, because I didn't see those finals. Somebody's mentioning Roger Richards says, hey, does the 13 foot drop from start to finish help with performance, especially for the
Absolutely.
Bike? Is it 13 feet or is it 13 inches? 13 feet. I kind of feel like we would see that 13 feet drop from start to finish. Like that can't be right.
Pomona's more than that. The rule is 1%. And 1% of 1,320 is 13 feet.
Wow.
And when they built the racetrack, they built the racetrack to the rule. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But does being a little bit downhill help? Yeah, that's part of why it makes it such a speed-friendly track for the motorcycles. It's the same for everybody, right? So it's not like, well, Joe's lane is downhill and mine's uphill. But it is, again, it is well within spec, within the rules when they build racetracks, is what they need to be. And if it helps mile an hour a little bit, then good. I'm all for it.
There you go. Chuck says the biggest bummer of the weekend was not being able to interview the sportsman winners because they ran after the finals. That is true. So let's talk a little bit about those guys. In addition, complimenter David Barton, first ever Factory Showdown super mod. But I didn't see the race, Alan. What happened? Barton won it.
Yeah, the other guy went red. Barton came in there just to do some testing. There was a handful of the factory showdown cars that came down there. And, you know, you can enter one in super stock or you can enter one in comp. In comp, you can run it all out. And those guys aren't really concerned about, you know, saving an index or doing whatever. They just come down and have at it. But, you know, when it got into eliminations and, you know, had a good car, was going down a racetrack, got some good fortune, had a couple of red lights in the other lane and just kept bringing it back. And in the final round, I think he was only down 3 or 4. And I believe the guy he was racing was down like 14. So, you know, the guy leaned on the tree a little bit, came up red, and Barton becomes the first ever stock eliminator car, to my knowledge, the first ever stock eliminator car to win comp eliminator.
Unbelievable. Pete Dagnolo and super stock, Marion Stevenson and stock. And Marion, I think, went up against Morgan Wilson, who was in her first final round. Marion, that's his first win in the car. He was pretty fired up. What about those races? Dagnolo, of course.
For Marion, it was his first stock win in like 14 years. He had won a couple super stock races in that time, but it's the first time he'd won stock in quite some time. The super stock final was decided on a red light also. There was a little bit of red light itis when we got into finals. But when you look at, you know, like the old school, look at all the stuff that's out there in super stock right now, whether it's the factory GT cars or whether it's, you know, the factory stock super stock cars, or whether it's even the GT things that are just like the highest tech, coolest racing machines, we end up with an old school modified stocker and a Hemi Dart. That's just a fun pair to run in the final round. Unfortunately, Camilla jumped a little soon and went red, but it was good finals. It was a shame that we didn't get to do the Parade of Champions. For anybody that doesn't know, we haven't touched on it yet, but there was a pretty big Pro Mod crash earlier in the day that basically took about 40 minutes. And that threw everything out of sync. So in order to keep the pros on time so they could get the TV show done in time, and no, it was not live TV, but you still need to keep them on schedule so that the TV guys can do what they need to do. And because of that, it just forced us to run the finals of the Sportsman afterwards. So, you know, shame we missed out on the Parade of Champions, but congratulations to everybody who won.
Yeah, Billy Upton, Jim Perry, and Super Comp, Super Gas, Darius Portier getting down to three cars, local from South Florida for many years, and Ronnie Proctor and Top Sportsman. Great job by Ronnie. Stevie Fast, Pro Modified. Like, that was, he runnered up in Atlanta. I'm sure he wanted to win that one very badly, came back and got the job done there on the quest for three in a row. And Jay Turner and Top Fuel Harley. Great racing all around. Fun racing, exciting racing. Yes, so happy Jose Gonzalez was okay after that incident. Got to speak with him on the starting line, but top to bottom, great weekend racing. And now we're on to Houston. Pretty excited about that as well.
I am as well. Just give us good weather. You know, Houston, they've had some weather problems down there for the last couple of weeks. And the forecast, I think, right now is a little up in the air. But, you know, I'm headed down there with a positive attitude. If you give us good weather, that racetrack will serve up big numbers. And looking forward to getting back to Houston. You know, that was one of the races that we did get to run last year, albeit at limited capacity. You know, the local restrictions as far as Texas are pretty wide open. So I think there's a whole lot of fans down there that missed out on their NHRA last year that are going to come out and see us. And I'm looking forward to seeing everyone else.
I am excited. And yes, Ma Nature, please give us a break and we'll see what happens. Alan, great job as usual. Really appreciate you. And I will see you in a few days and we'll do it all again.
All right, Joe, travel safe. We will see you in Texas.
Thank you so much. There he goes, the voice of the NHRA, Alan Reinhart, with us here on WFO Radio. How about that? We had Alan for over an hour. Like, I feel bad, right? Chopping into the day, man. He's out there doing stuff. But my goodness, what a good event. Now, remember, everybody, we're going to be back. We're going to be back at 4 o'clock. Don't go anywhere. 4 o'clock, Dallas Glen. So like the page, subscribe, click the bell, set a reminder, follow along if you're on Twitter watching on Periscope, because Dallas Glen, a first-time winner in Pro Stock, is going to be joining us from KB Racing, and we're going to talk about his first win and look at some photos from behind the scenes, and it should be great. Tomorrow, Steve Johnson, 11 a.m., John Force, 2 p.m. Exactly. It's going to be great. Let's see. Umbrella Saturday morning at Houston. Well, I hope not. I know people have said that, but the weather, you just can't predict. You can guess, but you cannot predict. All right. Final thoughts. Put them in the comment section. Your final comments in the comment section. And I will tell you about the people who make it possible. But brand new WFO headwear, headgear, otherwise known as a hat. Available on our website, go to WFOradio.com. Get yourself one of these. I will send them out. It has been great to see some of the early adopters with that. Also, big thanks, speaking of Marvin Rodak, Rodak's Coffee and Grills.com, 817-924-7000. 6821. That's rodaxcoffeeandgrills.com. Hot sauces and spice rub coffee. This is where my Sumatra organic honey has been. I was looking for this morning. Like, where is it? I was very intense. But turns out it was in the WFO studio. So I had some Ethiopian instead today. But give Marvin a call. Get yourself some gourmet coffee and change the way you live to a better way to live. Samtech.edu, the School of Automotive Machinists and Technology, Houston, Texas, baby, heading down that way. And I got a text from Brian Massengill, middle of the event. And he's like, dude, Houston, man, I don't know. We'll see. And while I'm thinking about Texas and Texas people, let me finish the spot first. Blockhead CNC programs, Motorsport EFI tuning. You could get a job as a CNC programmer. You work for Boeing with a Samtech graduate. You can go to many places. They've got great connections throughout all these industries. Samtech.edu. And of course, tell them you heard about it on WFO radio. Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology, TotalSeal.com. 40% of your engine's friction comes from your piston rings. So why not reduce that number to as low as possible and unlock the hidden horsepower? Also, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday, we're going to do a Total Seal Hidden Horsepower live on Facebook. Go to their Facebook page right now, Hidden Horsepower Total Seal, and we are going to do it live. And you will check it out. Bren Strader from EFI University and Lake Speed Jr. are going to be talking about the secrets of engine building and reducing that friction. TotalSeal.com. And of course, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, the dragster adventure where you can drive a dragster, you can get your top alcohol funny car license, you can learn the ways of a champion, or you can just have a good time in an afternoon with Frank Hawley. Go to FrankHawley.com and ask about it. They travel around the country. They can set up a race for you and your friends, you and your sales team. I think it's a great deal for clients, right? Like, you want to show your clients you love them? Do the dragster adventure. WFO store, like, you can pick up the Warren Johnson book in the WFO store. You can pick up Snake's book in the WFO store. You can pick up WFO hats in the WFO store, or even get some free stickers in the WFO store. It's on our website, WFOradio.com. And yes, face coverings may not be the thing, or maybe they still are. That all depends on you in the WFO store. And if you want our 10th anniversary t-shirt, it's at NitroFishRacing.com. So I want to mention Craig Gaultier. Had a pretty nasty crash, totaled his car down at the Plex this past weekend. Sitting at a restaurant, decompressing, watching drag racing on the TV, going through my phone, got the, you know, just sorting it out. And Craig is talking about he had a crash. I was like, what? Next thing you know, there's the video. Like, way past the finish line, the car just kind of goes left and right and hit the wall and barrel rolled. Just very sad. He was scheduled to run Greg Stanfield in the final round, and Greg like split the Wally with him because they never got to race. And it was just a great moment. But, you know, Craig's a friend, man. And tough stuff. Just, you got to respect the speed, right? You think about a super stock car, it's on rails going straight down, printing tickets. No, man, you're still going very fast. And the good news is that Craig says he's going to be back, and just wanted to shout out and recognize Craig for a moment or two. And let's see what your comments are. Final comments in the comment section. We're not going to go a long time here because we're going to be back at 4 o'clock with Dallas Glenn. See what Dallas has to say. Jeff, thanks guys. Look forward to Steve Johnson, 11 a.m. special time. We're in a new universe with these live streams. I cannot promise consistent times. Got to do it when the racer is available. That's it. I make some recommendations and then they choose. So you have to enable notifications so that you get the notification when we're live and then come on and join or share the show afterwards, please. Jay, great show. Thank you, Jay. Jay's one of our Patreons, WFO Radio. You can find us patreon.com/WFO Radio, and it'll be great. Alan needs to continue to do some work on Fox, and Joe needs to call the rest of the races for the NHRA season on NHRA.TV. Well, yes, Chuck, I would like to be invited to go to the races. I would like to be invited. It's not my call. You know, tell your friends to get vaccinated. That will enable me to be at the races. It's directly connected, right? The more people get vaccines, the more people will be allowed at the races, the more people will be feeling comfortable to go to the races, and Joe will be there more. It's as simple as that. So when I tell people to get vaccinated, yes, totally selfish. Totally selfish. Couldn't find your polo shirt on your site. Not yet. I haven't got it up there yet, but we do have the polo shirts up there. All black, though. The red and black ones are not available. That's just me. Put the logo on a flat hat. You're not a flat hat guy. You're like an old school. Is that what you're talking about? That thing that you wear? Right? I what is that called? I thought that was a derby. We'll work it out, Roger. We'll get one made just for you, bud. That's what we'll do. Kangol style. We'll cover up that Kangol. Stephen Glenn, I'm glad I found you on YouTube. Another great show. Thank you, Stephen. A lot of people watching on YouTube. We're now over 1,000 subscribers, trying to get to 2,000 subscribers. Blake, what's up, Blake? Blake will be out there. Blake, get some questions ready for Dallas Glenn, buddy. We're going to hit him with them. Thoughts and prayers for Roy Hill. Yes, absolutely. Roy. Everything that I heard, Jerry Haas came over and told me that he talked to Roy and that Roy was, you know, shouting out, bummed out, but obviously better. You want medical information about Roy, go to his own Facebook page. But I heard that the information was good and getting better about Roy Hill. But yeah, if you're watching NHRA.TV, just a tough moment out there. It's a racetrack. And even the most experienced people, like I think about it all the time. You got to be always on. Simple as that. Got to be always on. And I find myself not always on sometimes. Alan, rough on Steve Johnson. Was he? I don't think he was. I actually agree with that. And Steve has agreed with it. We'll talk to him tomorrow about it. That whole Matt Smith thing, I think it worked out for everybody. But sometimes you have to be challenged. And there's no hatred among those guys, especially not now after all that has happened with Jock and a worldwide pandemic and so many of our people being involved. Like, but Matt Smith, Matt's a good guy, but he's not gonna sugarcoat anything. They work 24/7, 365. This is their whole life. And if one guy is doing that, then everyone's got to do that. And Steve's doing that now. And look at what's happening. And there's a bunch of other reasons, too. You know, we'll ask Steve tomorrow, 11 a.m. Oh, look, a report on Roy. I was there. I heard him doing Roy talk, so I knew he was fine. There it is. Good to know. During the live interview on Sunday. Oh, yes. Excellent stuff. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Remember, less than 2 hours. We'll be back. Dallas Glenn, it's a twofer. Share the show. Be ready. Pro Stock fans. Like, someone share this in all the Pro Stock pages. Let's fire it up for a first-time winner. All the people who complain all the time. You know, it's always the same people. No, it's not always the same people. Sometimes it's new people. Sometimes it's first-time winners. We got Dallas Glenn coming up, 4 o'clock Eastern Time, today, WFO.